Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Joining me on the podcast today from Washington, D.C. is Josh Rosenthal. And Josh has kind of a different way that he's going about building his portfolio. A lot of the guests that we've had on the show are really concerned with cash flow, and they're looking to put actual cash in their pocket every month. Where Josh is taking more of a long-term perspective, trying to build out his portfolio and hopefully sometime down the road be able to cash out at a big gain. Josh, welcome to the show. Before we get into your story, why don't you tell us how you got started in real estate?
Well, first, thank you for having me here.
Sure.
Many years ago, I felt that I needed to diversify my portfolio. It was right about the time of the dot-com boom and bust, and I realized that while I was working in technology, I needed to not also be investing in technology. So something that I understood was real estate. I had grown up in a house that my parents had bought for just a couple $100s and had repaired the inside, and we increased the livable space. So every time we refinished a room, that was a room we could live in. So I kind of grew up around the idea of a rehab. Mm-hmm. And to diversify, I took the money that I would earn in tech, and I'd go and start to invest it in real estate due to the time horizon I had for those investments.
Okay. Now, so tell me about exactly what you're doing. So in the area where your rentals are, Washington, D.C., it's a very expensive market. A lot of our guests use the 1% rule or the 2% rule so that they want to buy a property for $100,000 and rent it for $1,000 a month. But those numbers just don't work in Washington, D.C. When you're looking at a $500,000 house, it's not going to rent for $5,000 a month. So do you invest for appreciation because really there's no other option? Or I guess I'm just trying to understand exactly why you're not investing for cash flow and for appreciation.
In fact, you said the exact situation. You're not going to go and get the cash flow that you're looking for inside of this market when you're purchasing now. You need to have the ability to wait and even sometimes lose money every month until the neighborhood you're in appreciates, until the property itself appreciates, and to be able to go and weather those early years.
Now, do you look at that as risky, that if maybe you got into a tight situation and, you know, maybe a property is losing money every month and, you know, maybe you don't have the money to put into that property. Do you look at that as risky, that the properties aren't necessarily always standing on their own?
Absolutely, it's risky. And you need to, as we say, keep the gunpowder dry. So when you go and make that investment, you need to make sure that you have cash on hand, because doing this style of investment has the same inherent renter risks as doing the cash flow strategy. That is, I've had tenants that have tried to skip out on rent. Mm-hmm. They have abandoned the property. They've destroyed the property. And just like anyone that's investing for cash flow, you need to go and decide whether you pursue them or not.
Right.
You also need to go and make sure that you have enough money for any repairs in how they left the property. So these are risks that we have in this style, and you realize that you don't have a rental income to go and handle them.
Right. Yeah. You know, I'm really torn with your strategy because, you know, if you go back to the founding of our country, the property values in your market in Washington, D.C. have done nothing but go up, you know, over like 300 years. Like its prices are just going up. Like, you know, if you were to go back, say, 30 years, like a property that maybe 30 years ago was worth $100,000 is probably now worth $600,000 or $700,000. So like there is a lot of potential for appreciation in your market, but do you necessarily think that prices can continue to go up as much as they have?
Well, this is an interesting thing. And of course, we all sit around and say, if I had a crystal ball, I would know exactly where to invest. So you're going to take a risk no matter what. After all, if you're investing for cash flow, you have risks there as well in making sure that that continues to cash flow. So you have just different pressures.
Right. In
this case, I do believe that Washington, D.C. is going to continue to rise. I think it ultimately is undervalued. And that, for me, is why, with my local knowledge, I can go and pick places that I feel will have that ability to appreciate. So there are some really nice neighborhoods in D.C. that I absolutely don't invest in.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There are others that I think are prime.
So why is that? Like, why would you not invest in some of the neighborhoods?
Because they've appreciated well and they're stable. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting excessively more expensive. What I mean by that is the rate of the increase in the value of the house there does not keep up with a transitioning neighborhood where there's still time and there's still people coming in interested in going and getting involved and living in those neighborhoods.
Okay. Now, tell me this. So, you know, we've kind of survived the worst recession that we're probably ever going to see in our lives back in 2009.
You hope, right?
Like if something like that were to happen again, do you think you would be able to get through it?
Well, I play my investments a bit conservatively. I keep a good amount of cash on hand at all times. Pretty much, I try to keep 2 months of rent per property in cash.
Okay.
Just for these situations. You never know when there's going to be a water heater that blows, causing a lot of damage. Let me give you a real situation. Coldest day of the winter last year, I have a tenant that says the heater's not working. Well, it turned out that they had continually not replaced a filter that they said that they had. And when the heater tried to go and bring air in, the filter was too clogged. Because it was too clogged, the heater could not get enough air in to heat, and it turned off.
Oh, that
caused the pipe to freeze. That frozen pipe caused a burst pipe, which then ended up damaging the property. So in that situation, whether it's the tenant's fault or not, I need to have the cash ready to handle that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a worst case scenario. Did you have to replace the entire HVAC unit after that?
That I was very, very lucky with. It had turned itself off. So basically for the HVAC, all I needed to do was replace that filter and turn it back on.
Okay.
Now the pipe, I needed to go and bring a plumber in there and make sure that that everything was okay and that there were no additional leaks. And then, of course, repair drywall and anything else that had been damaged.
Now, tell me about your strategy when you were first getting started. Now, when you were first getting started, you were renting out houses by the rooms, and you've since moved away from that. But tell me about how you were trying to juice your returns a little bit. Back in the early days.
Sure. Well, I was a bit more aggressive, and I was definitely looking for ways to mitigate my risk and increasing my profits. So what I did is in D.C., we have a popular way of living, which we call group houses. That is, one person will go and collect all of the rent from the people in the other rooms and then go and pay that to the landlord, or other people in the houses going and paying directly to that landlord. Both models. So I created this exactly. That is, I went and got other roommates and I rented them rooms. And their rent reduced what I would pay for my own rent.
Okay.
So therefore, I was able to go in and increase that cash flow and reduce my own housing costs. On the flip side, I had to live with my renters.
Right. Okay. And so at some point you, you moved out of that property and you had a house manager that was basically running the property for you?
That's right. Okay. I switched and used the model where I rented to one person and that person had the roommates. I did that to make sure that I was complying with all of the rental laws in DC.
Now, how does that work? So if you're going to rent the house for, say, $1,000 a month and you've got four people paying $250, is the house manager paying $250 also, or does he? Do you give him a little bit of a discount because he's managing the house?
So he or she can manage it however they see fit. What I try to do is I try to set them up for success in that we say, well, you know, you could go and rent that room for $250, but you could also rent that room for $300. And therefore, when you have three of those rooms rented at $300, you just reduced your monthly rent by $150.
Okay.
And that's how they would do it. And then every year, as the house appreciates and the ability to rent increases, I have the option of going and increasing that that rent that person pays. For me, I generally don't. When the person is in and the person is stable, I try to set them up to have and leave a little bit of meat on the bone for them. So they're able to now charge instead of $300, $325, or $350 for each of the rooms. And therefore, they're getting that benefit. And the more benefit they get, the better they maintain the property.
Right. Now, what happens if a room is vacant? Are they responsible for still paying you the $1,000 a month? Or if room two is vacant, do you say, okay, well, you know, we'll take $300 off this month?
No, the rent is the rent.
Okay.
And so I work with them. I give them ways that they can better find people. I might even give them the copy that they might use to go and place an ad on Craigslist or some other service. And so I give them resources. I give them, as I said, ad copy and whatever else I can do to set them up for success.
Okay.
By me setting them up for success, I'm making sure that I'm successful as well.
Okay. So somebody moves out, they're going to just have to maybe take less of a discount that month because they're having to eat that cost for that vacant room.
So right. How I try to coach them through that situation is to say, have a great relationship with the people you're renting to. Get an idea, hopefully 3 months out, that you're that you want to leave. And also, one thing that I do when I was living with the people that I was renting to was I would say, hey, there is no fee for you to break your lease. No fee. As long as you replace yourself. So, you know, of course, that person is going to have to go and do a quick background check, and that might cost money to go for me to go and get a report done on them, but that's a small amount of money.
Right.
So in that situation, I might have, let's call it an administrative headache, though a small administrative headache, but that person leaving loves the flexibility, and in return goes and does a good job at replacing themselves,
right.
And everyone wins. The person in the house gets a continued rental income, and of course, I get the stability.
And it's a win-win for everybody. That really sounds good. And so renting the houses out by room, you were able to get a lot more than if you just rented the house out to a family, right?
That's right. So when I was younger, I was also even more aggressive in what I did, is that I would go and rent out the house itself, but not the yard, for example. And in the yard, depending on the property, they would have the ability to go and rent the parking spots to somebody else or one of the people in the house. In one property in particular, it had a great place for a garden. And in DC, there's a dearth of gardens. So people said, hey, I'll go and rent that from you, especially I can keep my tools on site. The housemates were happy that the backyard was well maintained by the gardener. And the gardener was happy to have a place to garden. And for me, I was happy to have the extra income.
Right. That's great. Now, so as you got older, you moved away from this model. So now you rent the houses out to one tenant and you don't do the group housing anymore?
So I still rent. It depends on the situation. I will sometimes get involved in group homes, but again, it will be just like you're saying, where I'm going to go and rent to one person and I'm going to have a good amount of stability with them. But overall, what you're saying is right. I've generally moved away from,
okay,
from that situation.
Yeah. Was it just because there was too much hassle or too much management, too many people coming and going, and it's easier if there's, say, a family in there?
Actually, it's something that you wouldn't expect. Basically, I got a corporate tenant that has been renting more and more of my houses, and they manage the people coming and going.
Oh,
so
wow.
I get stable rent that's guaranteed by an organization, and they bring the people in and out. And well, I just do what I do, which is the being an owner operator and managing.
Wow, a corporate tenant. So how did you find a corporate tenant for your properties or property?
Hey, this is Washington, D.C. There's a lot of corporations that have a lot of people coming in and out. And in this situation, it was actually by chance. They needed to house people. They came across one of my ads. I did a deal with them for one property. And then they came back to me a few months later and said, we need more housing. Do you have anything more? And sure enough, I did.
And, that's great.
Well,
that is awesome. Wow. Okay. Well, Josh, I mean, this is really interesting to see how you've been able to make things work without using the traditional models that everyone is using. But I think it's great. I think what you're doing is great. And I think it would be interesting to maybe see at some point who wins, like in 20 years. Like, have you made more on appreciation, or do the cash flow investors make more? That would be interesting to see. So, Josh, why don't you tell us what you're doing online? I understand that you have a business that you run that a lot of our listeners may be interested in.
Yeah, this would, in fact, be good for anyone that's managing properties, whether they're looking for cash flow or they're land banking in the way that I do. And that's the website is called movein.space. And what I realized with my tenants is that there was no standard way to do a move-in and a move-out inspection, as important as those items are. So I created something that was very simple to use, no app or anything to install or configure. You just simply take your cell phone, go to movein.space, sign in, and you're ready to begin doing your walkthrough inspection, whether it's move-in or move-out. The tenant and landlord can do their own inspections, and they can share it with everyone else. That is the landlord and the housemate, or if they have housemates, you know, they can go and share it with them. Unlike paper, there's nothing to misplace and there's no illegible writing. And unlike pictures, you have context for everything. That is just in addition to a picture, you can add tags and you can add text. And all of that information is kept online for 13 months to allow them to do a move out inspection and allow you to compare the two. So this works out for all parties. It's date stamped and time stamped. So therefore, if you ever get into a discussion of when these pictures were taken, you can say, well, the document kept online that everybody has equal access to is clearly marked as when it was done, and the email address and names of the people that received it.
I think that's a great idea. And what does it cost?
It's absolutely free.
Awesome.
So the idea is just a free tool anyone can use. And that's why I created it, because I realized that I was having my own problems managing the paper, as well as even having tenants that said to me, well, those pictures you took, I don't know when they were done. They could have been done years before I moved in, even though I may have, in one situation, was with them when the pictures were taken.
Right. Josh, I think this is a good idea. I encourage everyone to check it out. So it's movein.space, not .com/space. And
that's right.
Definitely check it out. I'll go ahead and put a link to it in our show notes page. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode89. Josh, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. And thank you for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.